Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time for another version of This Life podcast.
That's right, without Bob Forrest, but Shelley Sprague
I'm standing in. Shelley's Sprague in,
doing a wonderful job, and maybe we'll just kick Bob out forever. I don't know.
He wants her to. He's making an album.
He's been asking.
He's making music.
Okay, good for him.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. He's whatever Bob needs to do. He is really talented.
Very talented.
Everyone forgets Bob was a rock star in the 80s, literally one of the most significant musicians in Los Angeles.
I have not forgotten that.
Were you part of that? I was there. I know you were using with him back in the days.
Yes,
were you part of his whole rock scene too?
I was extremely aloof around any of the, you know, the types of bands and stuff. It was very kind of a local scene, but it was happening.
I mean, it
was really happening.
Well, all the Chili Peppers were the main sort of...
That was the main orbiter.
Yeah, those right?
Everyone was orbiting around them. But yeah, it was a great time. It was an interesting time. I don't have huge amounts of memories of it because when you're not...
When you're strung out on heroin,
you're smoking crack, you know, you're drinking lots of booze and stuff.
Turns out you don't remember things so well.
You just don't remember that much. I mean, you know.
All right. Well...
That was the 80s.
That was the 80s?
And the very 80s. Early 90s.
Yeah.
Whew.
When did you get sober finally?
95. 23 years.
Let us bring in somebody we worked with on Celebrity Rehab. Amber Smith. You can follow her on Facebook at Real Amber Smith and also on Instagram, Amber Lee Smith 1. Amber, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
You're great. Oh, listen to her, right?
Hello.
Hey there. have you and Shelley spoken since like in years and years?
No, but I thought about her the other day when I was thinking about opiate addiction.
Yeah.
And she had said that it's a horse of a different color because you don't really realize what's going on around you. You're euphoric. You really can't see the destruction. And I thought so much about her when I was thinking about how special opiates are with the epidemic. And like, you just can't, you look.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh, you're breaking down. You're breaking up on us. Are you still there?
Can you hear me?
I hear you now. Yeah, we heard most of what you said about the opiates.
So don't move around too much. Get the right Wi-Fi.
Oh.
Just sit still.
Okay. You know what? Let me try to just stay
in a
right
good Wi-Fi.
Here. Maybe this is a lucky spot.
Perfect. Okay. And I was telling Shelley.
Maybe she should say that again.
Shelley, there was something you said to me a few years ago that I was sharing with Shelley that really stayed with me about how I used to always tell you to connect to your feelings and to connect to other people. And you you said she didn't know what I was talking about because she was cut off from her feelings.
Sure. Okay.
And you said it was even like 2 years after you stopped using that the feelings started coming back. Is that about right?
That's about.
Oh boy.
Probably the weirdest thing is perspective.
Yeah.
When I was using, I thought let's say you're watching a movie and I think it's terrible. And somebody else is like, well, I kind of liked it. I thought they were lying. I thought we all saw the same terrible movie and that they were lying. Mm. I didn't send other people's perspective. There's all these other perspectives and they can be very different. I had no clue. It was like I could only see things through my perspective.
Isn't that interesting? And the opiates sort of lock you into that.
The myopic sort of view that
–
because you get into such levels of survival mode that you can't really expand on anything. You're just so self-centered.
It's almost like
if you were
in pain, all you could think about was your pain.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just a singleness of purpose that you can't really expand out and to see things from other perspectives. Mm-hmm. You don't have the luxury of that when you're in complete survival.
And Amber, talk to us about how you are now, what's going on. I have to say this because I remember these stories you would tell me about these psychiatrist office. You'd wait and having panic attacks outside their offices. And these people, no one ever helped you, and now you're thriving. Tell us how you're doing now.
Oh boy. See, I don't know where we last left off. Let me just give you a quick synopsis of like the last 8 years. So I did the show and I kind of didn't want to go back into entertainment. It was lost for me. I had been using so much drugs and doing entertainment. I was so burnt out. So I kind of went into like reclusion. I was very lost for a long time, but in recovery and loving recovery, but lost, like I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I couldn't remember half of my life. So there were several obscure years there. And then I got into a relationship and I started to travel around with this relationship. And I really grew in that relationship, you know, serving someone else's needs. And then I got sick. I was literally on top of the world, you know, in this relationship. And he moved me away from LA. He said, I want to get you out of Los Angeles. And I was like, please. And he moved me by the beach. And I got ill and I couldn't get out of bed. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. I got very sick. Mm-hmm. And I started to kind of go down the rabbit hole in health and look at all different kind of alternative healings. And for 2 years, I was like bedridden. And then finally, I realized it was my implants.
Right.
I had silicone implants and had to take them out. I don't know if I have discussed this with you. Did I discuss this last time?
I don't think so.
Anyway, I removed them after 2 years of being bedridden, and I'm getting better. And that was actually 2 years ago. But during that time where I was trying to figure out everything about health, I entered this school, the Los Angeles School of Homeopathy, and I became a homeopath because I was just so lost. I was just trying to find anything to help me not die. And I, you know, I found a whole new career that I'm incredibly passionate about.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Are you treating other people now?
About to. I have two cases to turn in to graduate, and then it's all me.
Oh my God, how exciting for you.
Okay.
I know.
So what, do you know what the syndrome or what that was that was making you sick particularly?
Silicone toxicity. So I had saline implants. So I thought I was safe. You heard all this stuff about silicone implants.
Right.
Well, saline implants are wrapped in a silicone shell.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's just the inside has saline and not silicone. Mm-hmm. So all implants have silicone. The silicone's toxic to the body. Mm-hmm. And if you go on these Facebook groups or people that are having the same symptoms, they're having ringing in their left ear. They can't get out of bed. Their eyes are very swollen up. It's the same symptoms. Silicone's really bad for the body. And also there's platinum in implants as well. So I started to feel better and better, but I didn't even think I was going to survive the surgery to get them out.
Wow.
Okay.
I have the same symptoms.
You don't have any implants.
I don't have implants.
Are you still in that relationship? Is that working okay?
I'm not. I'm not. I'm still out here. You know, I got sick and I couldn't travel. And I was so ill.
Yeah.
I basically went back into survival mode, but in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm feeling much better now. I didn't realize my thyroid was low, and I just got it checked, and I got put on thyroid, and I feel amazing.
Great. Oh, that's good. And I remember when I last saw you in person, you had a friend who was a psychiatrist that you were hanging around with.
Mm-hmm.
And did she help you?
Yeah. I have the most amazing friends. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing. I've built that part of my life up really well. I've built up careers coming into love life. That's never been that great. That's the last holdout right there. But yeah. I've got a great group of friends. I have a squad.
That's good. And are you living now still by the beach?
I'm by the beach. I'm still in the house that we had, but he's just not here.
And your mom, how's she doing?
My mother passed away.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry.
She passed away, thank you, about a year and a half ago.
Huh.
Okay.
I mean, she was pretty old, right? She must have been her 80s.
No, she was late 70s, but she was very sick.
Yeah.
Congestive heart failure.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay. My goodness, poor thing. Mm-hmm. How do you – now, speaking of perspective, I really think that's an interesting topic that people don't talk enough about. And you probably see your life from a different perspective now, right? How do you feel about that? How do you see that now?
Oh, I don't know. I'm now quite religious. Mm-hmm. So things look very different to me now. Before, I just thought I was on this globe, you know, that's spinning around and, you know, we just reincarnate and that's that. And drug addiction was just a coping mentality. And now it's so much different for me now. Now I'm a born again Christian. I had a very bad thing happen. I was very into New Age for a long time and the occult, and had something very bad happened as quick as I could. And now I'm a born again Christian. I see things very differently now. I see that we're kind of in the spiritual battle. I feel like the Christians were right. I feel like it's a battle of good and evil in the world. And I just didn't have God in my life. And I just went far left. You know, I just went into drugs and alcohol and escorting, and I got really, really lost.
And are you in the, I think dark and light is actually an interesting way of experiencing these things for you, because I remember feeling the darkness with you. And are you in the light now? Do you feel like the light is there?
Oh, I feel so much better.
Yeah.
So homeopathy has a very interesting way of looking at drugs and alcohol. You may not agree with this, but it's kind of unique. They believe that alcoholism is suppressed syphilis. That it's like people that have syphilis, or suppressed syphilis rather, are very OCD. They drink to die. They are the people that completely self-destruct. They're the people that can't even have mouthwash with alcohol. And that drug addiction is suppressed gonorrhea. And typically people with suppressed gonorrhea, the first time they have sex, they get warts. They get HPV, genital warts. So they're night people. Can't really think until nighttime. And it's really interesting. And I got treated with something called Metirinum, which is the remedy for gonorrhea, which is drug addiction, because I never much was an alcoholic. And I do feel so much better. I mean, even I feel better going to God and being a Christian. And I feel better after taking that remedy. That's why I, you know, now I specialize in homeopathy for addiction.
And what's the remedy?
Metirinum.
And
for
gonorrhea. Where is
and,
that?
And for syphilis is syphilinum.
And where do you derive these products, or who makes them? How do you get them?
Well, they're overseas. They're hard to get.
Okay.
It's not easy, but we get them. Homeopathy mm-hmm. has just been pushed very much underground by big pharma.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly transformational. And I came about it by accident. I didn't even believe in that stuff.
Right.
Until I had to go to that school because I was so ill from what I later found out was the implants.
Mm-hmm.
And they also teach you a lot about what makes you toxic in there. And, you know, like mercury and silicon. And, you know, certain adjuvants in vaccines and aluminum. And so I'm that girl now.
Okay.
Well, yeah. You seem to be thriving. That's the nice thing to see you smiling and laughing and just so bright.
Thank you.
Yeah, it really is. And I it seemed like that relationship was good for you when it lasted, right? You're saying the relationship was not good, but it was good when you were in it.
It was good when I was in it. I just got sick. That's it. You know, yeah. I couldn't get in. He liked to travel and I just got ill. That's it. You know, it was just karma. I don't know what happened there.
Oh, the other thing, one of the reasons I want to check in with you, I noticed I was, you know, I scrolled through my Facebook page once in a while, and all of a sudden Amber got very active and very aggressive on Facebook. I was like, oh my goodness, okay. Amber is speaking out. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
Again, that goes back to becoming a Christian and looking at things. I was a Democrat for 20 years. And kind of, you know, very much on the left, you know, climate change, the whole thing. And then I don't even know what happened. I got baptized 2 months later. The world just flipped upside down for me. Everything that I thought was good was bad. And everything I thought was bad was good. And I saw, you know, I was 16 years old. The first time I had sex, I got pregnant and had to have an abortion. And it just hit me like a bomb all these years later that I murdered my child. And I used to think Republicans were selfish and they just cared about cutting taxes for the rich. And I bought the liberal lie. I bought it all. And now I completely see the Republican point of view. And I want to speak out to other people that are kind of lost in the liberal lie. That's just my opinion. And show them, hey, you may be going down the wrong road here.
Okay, can you explain to me how religion and politics are married here?
It just happened. Like I said,
she doesn't know.
I came into Christianity, and within 2 months of being baptized, I walked out my front door, and everything flip-flopped. And here's the weirdest thing. So my car broke down on the side of the road, and this guy came to give me a tow. And I was thinking, like, maybe I should, you know, I kept breaking down. Maybe I should get a new car. And he said, well, don't get those self-driving cars. So we started getting into conspiracy theories and stuff about is the government behind the self-driving cars? And then suddenly he says, I got to tell you something. The whole world popped upside down for me. And I started to see everything different. Like that that, you know, they're trying to make bad boys and bad girls the ones you want, and the good girls and the good boys are the, everything is flipped upside down, you know what I mean, in society. And narcissism and being all about self is self-love, and all this tolerance for perversion is just, you know, just love one another, don't have any boundaries. And I said to him, that's the same thing that happened to me. And he also had just become a Christian. I can't tell you why when you become a Christian, you suddenly start to see the world very differently, but you see the world with new eyes.
Let me just to give you a basic taste of what Amber posts. Candace Owen is badass. I think that pretty captures the tone of Amber's.
Well,
of Amber's
forgive
post.
Me, but I understand Christianity. I grew up in a household where you know, that was definitely part of our family culture later on. But what I don't understand is how religion and Christianity becomes married to politics in America. And that's my question.
I don't think Amber understands and knows it. She just makes the association there. She's saying something happened.
Okay.
Some temporal. Some
born again politician.
Or maybe you do know more. Exactly. Tell us.
Well, it also, you know, there's this kind of generalization of the religious right and the godless left a little bit, or there's a little bit of that going on. That's always been around.
So it made you skeptical about the left?
It made me see through the left, yeah.
Well, it's interesting because Christianity began far before America was a country. And I'm just, I guess I'm just wondering what the, because there's lots of Christians in this country.
Both sides.
And there's lots of Christians in other countries as well who are under the laws of different types of politics and different structures economically and different structures.
I think Amber just observing something about her. I just observed something about her, and she's telling us it sort of happened to her. I think if we talked to her in 6 months, she'd probably have more to tell us.
Oh, okay.
Don't you think, Amber?
Yeah, probably.
She's going to run for governor.
You going to run for governor?
But I don't know who Candace is. Who's Candace?
Candace Owens is an African-American conservative.
Oh, okay.
She's a very smart lady. Very,
okay.
And she is badass. Yeah. She is badass. You may not agree with her, but she's badass.
Oh, okay.
And so, well, Amber, listen, we just want to spend some time with you and say hi and thank you for doing so. And it's just great to see you smiling and laughing and thriving. And go be aggressive in any means you want. I think it's just great. It's great.
I'm just passionate. I want to spread the news.
Yeah, good for you. And other than the Instagram and the Facebook, should we look for you anywhere else?
Well, in a couple of months, I'll be starting South Bay Homeopathy. So you'll probably find my website.
Also, at Twitter, too, at Amber Lee Smith. We can follow you there. I'm sure you'll be talking about it there. All right, Amber, thank you so much. We're going to take a little break and hang on. We'll be right back. Let's talk about CBD. It's, of course, everywhere today. It's a hot topic, and I get asked about it all the time. Bottom line, although there are way more claims, there is very little clinical evidence just yet. The science is lagging behind, but many people are using it and reporting anecdotally very good results. I want to first define exactly what we're talking about here. CBD, or cannabidiol, is an extract from hemp. And while you might associate it with marijuana, CBD is the non-high, non-rewarding component of hemp. And it's responsible for other effects, calming, sleep, not high. Now, about the products, there are a ton of them out there today. Forget the vast array of reported health benefits. It's important to be aware of what you're buying. I was recently introduced to a company called Select CBD, an Oregon-based company that focuses on high-quality ingredients and manufacturing standards, no hype. Their CBD-based products are available in a wide range of formulations and flavors, each of which is clearly described to you so you can make an informed decision without promises that seem too good to be true. Like I said, the reported benefits of CBD are compelling, and I'm excited to see how things develop with the science as this booming industry gets going. So if you want to try CBD, you might check out Select CBD. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/select. That is my site, drdrew.com/SELECT. For a limited time, you can save 25% at checkout with the code DRDREW. And we're back, and it's good to talk to Amber. Nice to see her light and cheery. I can't sign off all the homeopathic stuff. It doesn't fit a basic science, but
if it
helps her and helps people, fine.
Sure. I mean, if people are doing well and they are happy,
yeah.
I think that they're much better off, right?
If they're happy, yes. We got some emails. We got a bunch of stuff to get into here. This is an interesting topic. Hi, I'm interested in trying ayahuasca and mushrooms. So what do you think about mushrooms being legalized in Denver?
I think it's an interesting move.
Yeah, me too.
I think that we're opening up quite a bit of chemical or allegedly natural types of difference. But it is chemical, right?
Yeah,
and that's
period.
My issue with it is because chemical to me doesn't sound like a process. It sounds like an event. Mm-hmm. And those events fade. Uh-huh. And then we have what's left over from the event.
The injuries.
Whatever that injury is. And I don't think we know enough about these things to really endorse how they're going to benefit people.
Right.
I don't know if they're going to benefit people. It's something to try, I suppose.
Part of the problem is the idea of a evil molecule, right? The idea that this molecule should never be touched by human hands. This Schedule 1 is a ridiculous thing.
Well, of course.
Right. Yeah, that's and silly. So we have not done the research to tell what good they could do. Now, there's some research coming on with psilocybin, which is the mushroom.
Correct.
For end of life that looks really good.
Looks really good.
Yeah, end of life anxiety. So there's something that they're finally doing some research
on. I'm sure that the research will come out to either support uses for these things.
Particular situations.
Or particular situations. Or used in clinical settings.
Yeah.
With professionals. Yeah. I mean, I think that part of it, to me, it just is important around the scientific basis of what we're going to put into our system and if we're going to endorse it or not. I can't endorse even cannabis at this point. There's not enough information. There's not enough studies. And there's just a bunch of people telling me, oh, this helps me.
Right.
But I'm like, okay, but wait. How long is it going to help you?
How much?
What
happens next? What's the downside? How do we look for that?
Where is the pathology? Are you addicted? Are you not addicted?
Who's managing
this? How are
this?
You functioning?
Who's managing it? The dosing.
There's no one managing the dosing. Yeah. And it's all, it just sounds like, you know, people who just want to do what they want to do, maybe not the best thing for them
right.
to do.
That's exactly right. Ayahuasca, now that's getting interesting too. Now they have these people that can give you these guided trips and they have different religious practices around them now. And there's a lot of that in Los Angeles.
Tons.
I don't know what to make of that. I saw some serious brain injury from ayahuasca, so it scares me. And whenever I sort of informally just observe the kinds of reactions people get to it. They seem to break into 30% get a terrible reaction, have the worst feelings of
their
life.
That would happen to me if I tried that. Yeah.
30% get sort of nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mixed.
And then 30% get lovely insights, great things, and they feel like it was a very positive experience to them. I don't know. I just remember people coming back from Ibogaine having their personality changed. That scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, and it scares me to think that if you go under the influence of something that's you know, potentially mind-altering, right?
Yep.
You're going to have to trust the environment that you're in because you don't have faculty. And I just don't want to put myself in that situation.
You don't want to be that.
I mean, maybe I'm just not, you know, free and open enough, but I'm just not interested.
So thoughts on whether it might be safe to try or it's something I should bring up to my doctor. Your doctor's not going to be likely to know much about it. I'm pretty solid. Once in a blue moon, I feel dissociated from reality, but depression runs my family. I had an uncle who did acid, got stuck up on a roof, and committed suicide a few months later. Interesting.
But that, to me, sounds like there was a predisposition for something. And
sure.
That's what scares me about ayahuasca and the psilocybin. And
you're not screening for those predispositions.
They're not screening.
Yeah.
And we don't know what's going to happen. So how bad do you feel?
Yeah.
And is it going to be worse? And what would be the potential for it becoming worse
if
you do this?
Yeah, we just don't know. Here's another email. My son's name is Draven Johnson. He's the second smallest heart transplant recipient by UCLA.
Wow.
His transplant was at 3 weeks after birth. Draven is now 4 and thriving. The intention of my correspondence is to shed light on the unfortunate decision by many parents to not vaccinate their children. Mm-hmm. Having an immune-compromised toddler makes allowing him to live a full life amongst other children his age hard to non-existent.
No, oh, that's tough. That's a tough
situation. This is the thing about vaccines for me.
Okay.
We have an obligation. I don't care what your belief system is. we have an obligation to each other to protect one another, to protect the immunocompromised kids, to protect the babies that haven't been vaccinated yet, to protect the adults that haven't kept their vaccinations up. We have the homeless. If they get exposed to measles, it's going to be over. It's going to roar through there. Measles is so contagious.
So contagious.
If somebody walked through this room, you and I are sitting and podcasting in 2 hours ago, and we were not properly immunized, we would contract measles.
Right. And
it's that it's guaranteed and it's that contagious.
I'm just guessing. I wasn't around before vaccinations of measles. I'm just guessing, though, there was a good reason why we came up with it.
Leading cause of childhood death throughout human history.
Okay.
As recently as 1980, 3.6 million deaths.
Okay.
Okay. So,
yeah.
And that doesn't count the brain injuries and the deafness and all the
right.
other. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, actually, I have experienced my next door neighbor, her daughter was deaf. And it was because she contracted measles while she was pregnant with her daughter.
Oh, that's the worst. It's the stuff, the torch
that's
syndrome, that's called. Yes, of course.
That's what happened.
That might have been German measles, though.
Okay.
Yeah,
German measles. That sounds right.
But still, that's the other, the MMR, that's the R in the vaccine.
Okay.
So you might need to be revaccinated. We got revaccinated.
Okay.
And people out there should at least get their titers checked if they're born between 1957 and 1980.
Okay.
Are you in their window? Are you?
I am in that window. Thank you, though.
I think it's just simpler to go get the vaccine.
Of course.
So we just went and got the vaccine. Okay. But if you have any question, talk to your doctor, get the titers checked, and if you're not properly immunized.
My daughter was born with a congenital heart defect and had heart surgery immediately. And we had no question about getting her immunizations. And at that point, you know, obviously this woman who they had the heart transplant, obviously these are compromised folks.
Correct. It's a live attenuated virus. So they may not be able to give the virus to somebody like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I do, and I am grateful for the people that, you know, are saying, listen, this is what we need to do. Although the conspiracy theorists seem to have their own platform around what vaccinations are about and why they exist. But I'm a science-based individual. We're science-based. So, I mean, it's hard for me to bend my mind around the fact that there was a big conspiracy around poisoning Americans or something.
I don't care. Yeah. We have a responsibility to each other. We got to protect each other. And we've lost that. We're all such special, self-focused snowflakes. Our rights are all that matter. Yours don't count. We must reverse that.
Right.
Much like Amber's reversal. Mm-hmm. I thought that was okay. So she sees things differently. Good.
Yes, great.
Yeah. But we have to reverse the self-preoccupation to us being concerned with protecting one another.
Yeah.
And if you take that orientation, you run and get the vaccine. I ran to get it. I couldn't get it fast enough.
Right.
Because I want to protect everyone I'm around.
Right.
If I had a reaction... Too bad.
No, right. Too bad.
So what?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Long time Loveline listener. I've read about the love languages. My girl's in touch. Love language. I don't know what this guy's saying. Let's try another one. Have you talked to him regarding the devastation vaping and e-cigarettes is going on in our youth? Okay. Mm. I'm not feeling any problem with e-cigarettes.
Okay.
I don't want kids to get exposed to nicotine, but there's a strange phenomenon that no one is investigating. The higher the level of vaping of nicotine, the lower the level of drug use in high schools.
Okay.
There might be some – I'd much rather see them vaping than doing drugs. Much.
Well, of course.
Much.
Me
well,
too.
The world is in some sort of weird moral panic. Mm-hmm. They're confusing tobacco and nicotine.
Okay.
Nicotine is – essentially harmless.
Okay.
Not good for the adolescent brain, and it could hook them on the nicotine, which they will then just take forever.
Right.
And it may have maybe some cardiovascular effects in certain situations, but compared to drug use, thousands of times safer.
Of course. Much
and
safer.
So I don't understand the moral panic.
Okay.
People are in a moral panic about it.
Right. I do understand a certain aspect of it because I'm around a lot of vapors, people who are vaping.
Well, they end up using a lot of cannabis in there.
Yes, but even people who are not abusing cannabis or anything else besides vaping.
Just the nicotine.
Just the nicotine.
Yeah.
Here's the socio-bio issues around it.
Good.
They do not get out of their own myopic way. They are constantly obsessed with where their vape is. they're constantly obsessed with vaping. They can't hold conversations.
Like a cigarette.
They can't work without vaping. Yeah. They can't carry out their daily activities without vaping.
What age group is this?
This is 18 to 25, 18 to 30.
Adults.
People who are supposed to be functioning.
So severely
nicotine
addicted.
It the pacifier.
Yeah.
I call it their pacifier. It's their grown-up pacifier. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get work done. I'm trying to help get things done during the day. And every time I turn around, they're vaping. I'm like, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Can't they vape and work at the same time?
Well, yes, I suppose you can. But it still hinders your ability to really focus on what you're really doing.
Because you're in a big cloud or something.
Well, you're vaping and you're preoccupied. Is this a preoccupation?
Jeesh. All right.
So it's
a behavioral problem.
I think it's a behavioral thing. Yeah. I don't know about nicotine, but I see my cohort, anybody who's ever picked it up, like even later in life.
Yeah.
Boom.
They get going with it.
They do.
So why don't they get some nicotine gum or some nicotine patches or something to reduce the desire to pursue the nicotine?
Because when you're in it, you don't see the issues with it. Hmm. You know,
so they don't have a problem.
They don't have a problem with it. Right. You're not seeing the issues with it.
Right.
But when people have to go outside every 5 minutes, it's hard to get whatever inside done.
Well, that sounds like a dependency. They've got a problem.
Right. Now, yeah. I don't know if everybody who vapes becomes dependent on vaping. Yep. This is just my experience. Yep.
Okay.
With it.
That's a concern. I get that. Husband is 84. I'm 62. Married 38 years. He was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Last year, he had his prostate removed. That's at 83. That's crazy. Doctor told him his PSAs were normal. He takes morphine twice a day for pain.
Yikes.
Wait a minute. Then I think she's saying that maybe there's a recurrence. Why did the oncologist miss this? I need more information. If somebody's taking morphine for prostate cancer, it's because it's in the bones. And in an older person, it can be a little more aggressive. And there are certain prostate cancer that have very low PSAs that are actually really aggressive. Mm-hmm. So in an 83-year-old, why would they have removed his prostate? You normally just do radiation or implant, something like that. So anyways, a lot missing in that one.
Can I quickly ask a question about vaping?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there secondhand smoke from vaping?
Do you feel secondhand nicotine?
There's secondhand clouds of
steam.
From marijuana. Steam and
from
vapor.
Marijuana.
Sure, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like if somebody vapes in your car and you get a big whiff of it.
Something happened. Well, tell us the story, Susan.
Can you get high off of that?
Is there a story here?
I don't.
It happened to me recently.
Get high from contact. I just don't have that kind of body that does that.
But is there such a thing?
But I'm sure there's such a thing.
If you have kids and you smoke with them in a car, can they get secondhand?
In the old days, we would go, no, that's ridiculous. Of course, you're just smoking pot. Now, the pot is so powerful.
But it's a vape pen.
It's
thing.
So powerful.
I don't even know what anything.
Yeah, a wax pen.
It's a wax pen. It's so powerful that just being around it, for sure, you get high.
Okay. Well, your daughter is, you know.
Getting you high.
Well, it helped her. She had horrible nausea, and she's just like, "Oh, this feels." Because when she drives in the car, she gets super nauseous.
Oh, and then you got
me,
and then you got high.
That's what I should. I should do that. Maybe I don't know. I've never tried it, but anyways, because pot makes me paranoid.
Did you get high?
No, but I said, "Don't." I open the window because I don't want to be driving high. I don't know how this will affect me.
Right.
You know, I'll start driving really slow, or. No, I just was curious because they're all new to me. All of a sudden, I smell this weird smell. I go, what's that smell? And she goes, oh, I'm bipolar.
Here's a physician that's created a device called the implant first responder. Continuously monitors a patient's respiratory rate and then automatically delivers a rescue dose of naltrexone, of naloxone, if their respiratory rates get too low. This is not the direction we want to be going. Maybe for cancer patients.
Maybe for cancer patients.
But this is I can't understand how you can understand addiction and even conceive of something like this. If you are taking so much opiate that your life is in danger all the time.
We can't have that.
That's not somebody, that's not pain control. That's a drug addiction.
That wouldn't be pain control, clearly.
Right. And we have to recognize and get out of the opioids. Suboxone may be a decent medicine for chronic pain. All other opioids make pain worse. Do you, have you experienced anything different than that?
I have not experienced anything different than that. In fact, when we do finally get people off pain meds that they don't need to be on,
their pain either goes away,
or
goes down dramatically. Yeah.
And then they're willing to take other interventions
sure.
that actually help their pain, like physical therapy,
exactly.
yoga, exercise, hydrotherapy.
Local measures, whatever, xylocaines. But the if your average patient comes in and you ask them on a scale of 10, how big is your pain, the chronic pain patient on opiates, what do they tell you?
10.
They usually say 15 or 20.
Well, yeah.
They usually...
Okay.
They're very dramatic.
Very.
And then after 2 weeks coming off opiates, their withdrawal is finished. When you ask them again, on a scale of 10, what is your pain? What do they usually say?
They usually say it's down around a 5.
That's 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And do they, when they come in, how much are they talking about their pain?
Incessantly.
And 2 weeks later, how much are they talking about their pain?
2-3 times a day, maybe.
And if,
when we're asking.
Evoked.
When,
if evoked.
When, yeah.
If evoked.
Yeah, when we're discussing it.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They see how spectacularly different that is. Just taking them off the opiate.
Just taking them off the opiates. No, that's, I mean,
that's
I
so
can't
crazy.
Imagine people needing.
How many people
be
died because doctors opiates. Don't know that?
Oof.
Tens of maybe
that's,
hundreds of thousands.
That's
maybe.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people. And I think that too, I mean, the studies show that we as a culture are taking 90% of the pain meds that are manufactured.
In the world.
And we couldn't possibly have more pain than
what?
Everyone.
What? How dare you?
We have a better life
How
than could, everyone
yeah,
else,
no,
right?
So
we
ridiculous.
Should have less pain, right? We have all
That's
these
right.
like all these great
so,
you know,
so
doctors and all
if
this
you were to,
stuff.
If you were to guess why we're having all this stuff, what would your theory be?
I think it's somatic.
Yeah. But
yeah.
but what is it about our psychology that is so off?
I think that maybe our expectations are very high for how we're supposed to feel, especially as we age. I think that our expectations of happiness are out of balance with reality.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people have expectations of supposed to feel a certain way.
All
the
time.
And people do not manage their expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't lean into the pain or lean into the difficulty to get through it. They avoid it.
Right. The ordinary misery.
The ordinary misery that I feel like makes for people's unrealistic expectations to be constantly, you know, made more pathological by people who buy into this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super into like the body is telling you something. You don't need to mask it. You don't need to run from it or cover it up. It's telling you something. Like if I get in pain, I need to know that. And I need to change something, not take
or if
a pill.
Get anxious or depressed, that could be a message too.
That's also a message mm-hmm. because I'm overly stressed. I don't have enough good nutrition. I'm not sleeping enough. I'm not sleeping well enough. I'm engaged in some kind of relationship that's not good for me. I am engaging in some type of stressor that I can make changes in my life around.
I also think there's something. I'm looking up a definition for you of the word anomie. Here it is.
Okay.
I'm going to have you read it. Yeah. Read what that says.
Okay. Anomie is a condition in which society provides little moral guidance to individuals. It evolves from conflict of belief systems and causes breakdown of social bonds between an individual and the community, both economic and primary socialization. In a person that this can progress into a dysfunctional ability to integrate within normative situations of their social world. Example, an unruly personal scenario that results in fragmentation of social identity and rejection of values.
Aren't we all sort of suffering from this, something like that?
Well, where does that word – what's the Latin for that word? Where'd it come from?
Well, let me see if I can figure that out.
Okay.
It was a Durkheim word. It was absence of norms originally, sort of absence. It's absence of values, absence mm-hmm. of meaning, absence
okay.
of social connection. I think about it that way.
Sure.
And are we kind of in that?
Well, yeah, because we need that connection to, again, be the best we can be in the framework of social community and feeling purposeful and part of something. It's part of something bigger than us, or it's part of something that we all need to bond together to grow and change through. I think that, you know, the proverbial sort of seeking of happiness or joy,
yeah,
it can't be derived in the absence of unhappiness,
right,
and pain.
Right.
We can't separate the two.
It's from a word, the Greek word meaning lawlessness, a law. So lack of laws, lack of boundaries. Mm-hmm. And isn't trauma sort of lurking in the background in all these things?
Well, I always trace everything back. I mean, I could be myopic in the way that I view things because I am from a certain level of education, and then my parameters of experiencing people is a lot of trauma is in front of me all the time. So I could be projecting if I say something that's, you know, I feel like, yeah, maybe trauma is lurking in a lot of pathologies. I don't know if it's lurking in all of this sort of cultural menagerie of all this social change and
the mess we're in.
I'm not exactly sure if that does play a role, because I'm someone who sits in front of people who are at a bad place in their life.
Yeah.
So I don't meet a lot of people who are flourishing.
Well,
so much.
I would talk to 50 people every night on the radio for 30 years, and it was the same.
Okay.
But again, that's self-selecting, and
yes,
it's a bigger
pool. And they're picking up on, they're going to listen to Loveline because
there's something wrong. Yeah.
They like, you know, they have problems.
And then the ones that call in, more likely have trauma. But I just think it was an awful, we went through sort of a wave of it, I think. I think it was more than normal.
Well, we're going to see, I think, in the next 50 years that how all of the applications have kind of worked.
Yeah.
And if they have, because we need a couple generations to see it through.
Yep.
We're not going to be able to see it right away. So I'm wondering how my daughter's daughter is going to be.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder how those generations are going to benefit from a lot of recovery and a whole idea of, you know, being for the culture, you know, that sort of flip from that myopic, self-centered acquirement.
Being for the community
and changing that, because things have kind of paddled towards this direction, which is now impacting our cultural needs and wants so much. And our communities are, obviously, I live in Los Angeles. I feel imperative to talk about the cultural issues that are happening in our city, which are, I think, dire and moving towards epidemic.
Agreed.
On the streets. Mm-hmm. And if we don't band together, what's going to happen?
There will be an epidemic.
That's right. So I think it kind of lends itself to the idea that if we're in these situations, what is the solution is to come together.
Yeah.
And build communities so that we can wrap around these services for these folks, and we can, if we can solve the homeless and the encampments and the, you know, the that situation we have going on, I think our culture would have flipped back towards a more communal concern.
I hope so.
If we can do it.
I'd love to see that.
I would love to see it too. I think it's possible.
I will leave it with that positive thought. Ms. Producer, anything else you want us to do?
No, I think that Shelley has once again hit it out of the
delivered,
park.
Delivered. Oh, Shelley delivered.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next time. All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Thanks for listening and subscribing on your favorite platforms. Rate us 5 stars and tell a friend. Also, be sure to visit drdrew.com for the latest news. We'll tell you where you can find all of our health-related content, including the latest in-depth series, The History of Opium. You can now listen to it on the weekly Infusion podcast. We have some great and very interesting and appropriate interviews with key historical players in the history of opium. We're excited about our newest podcast, Dr. Drew After Dark, which has been described as a dark web reboot of Loveline. It's the hottest guest spot for all the most popular comedians. Beware, it is for a mature audience. It is kind of a reboot of Loveline. You can hear the episodes first in a podcast form Thursday. Then on Friday, you can watch all the video episodes when the YouTube page drops on the Your Mom's House YouTube channel. New episodes every week. Subscribe, tell a friend. Also on doctor.com, you can find Swole Patrol, our health and fitness podcast with Mike Catherwood. If you want something a bit more refined that will expand your intellectual horizons, please subscribe to the Dr. Drew podcast, where I feature a wide variety of very interesting and important guests. Get in-depth interviews there. Last but not least, me and Adam, Adam and Dr. Drew Show podcast. It's a lot of fun, and we are still together, and you can get it 5 days a week. So go to drdrew.com. Please tell a friend, and we thank you for it. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.